Well, hey, how's it going today? My name's Ben. I'm one of the pastors here at Tri-County. Usually I hang out in Grampian. I'm the Grampian campus pastor, and man, we just love it down there. It's a great, great place to be, and I am super excited just to start off this new series with everyone today. I mean, it's just going to be a great practical series because it's something that we all can relate to. And specifically, we're talking about neighbors, and specifically, we're talking about how we compare ourselves to our neighbors. And in this instance, a neighbor can be anyone, right? It could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be a coworker. I mean, it could be your literal neighbor who's next door. But just it's anyone that you can kind of find yourself comparing yourself to. And I thought, man, I'm really a horrible person to kind of start this series off because, well, I don't really compare myself to people. Like, I've kind of felt like I was pretty contented. As a matter of fact, about a weekend ago, I was preparing for this, and I was talking to someone. I was like, man, I don't even know how I'm going to relate this to anyone because I try not to compare myself to people, and I don't compare myself to anyone. And so they're like, well, you should just fake it and pretend. And I was like, no, that's not right. So I decided what I would do is like Monday morning, I was going to wake up, and I was going to go out, and I was going to make it a point to compare myself to someone. Like, surely I could find someone that I could compare myself to. Well, I didn't have to practice because here's what happened. Monday morning, I get in my car. I'm heading off. I don't even remember where I was heading to, but I'm heading off. And I'm usually when I'm in the car by myself, I like to throw on a podcast or something like that and listen, you know, learn while you drive, all that good stuff. And so I turn on this podcast, and it was one that I really enjoy listening to. And he had a new episode out, and it's a big kind of like this theology-rich podcast. And he talks about a lot of different issues and stuff like that. And he had this guest on his podcast who was a PhD, and he was a very popular professor up in Oregon somewhere. And he was just talking about all these great, smart ideas. And he said something really, really smart. And in my head, I said, man, I wish I was that smart. And then I was just like, whoa. I didn't have to stop and think about it. So I paused my podcast because I didn't want to miss any of that. So I paused it, and I just started driving and thinking, I just compared myself to this guy I don't even know. Like, I'm just listening to him, and he's just talking about these smart ideas. I'm just thinking, well, surely, man, I do compare myself to people, right? And I thought about more of that, and as my mind kept reeling and kept going and kept just thinking about all the times, even in the past week, that I did compare myself to someone, whether I realized it or not. And then I thought back probably about 5 or 6 years ago. So you see, before I came to Tri-County, I was a youth pastor, and I did youth ministry for like about 9, 10 years. And one thing I loved about youth ministry is getting other youth pastors together, right? We would just get together, and we talk about life. We talk about, you know, how ministry's going. We talk about just, you know, how we can pray for one another and work with one another and all this good stuff. And so I usually made it a point in whatever town I was in to gather some different youth pastors together for lunch every month or so. And we would get together, and usually the first meeting was always awkward. I don't know if you know this, but pastors are horrible at comparing themselves to each other. Not that, I don't think they do it intentionally or anything like that. I mean, we're people too. We make mistakes. But the first meeting, you'd always sit down, new faces, and you're sitting down next to these other youth pastors, and this one question always comes up, and I hate this question. This one question always comes up. And the question is, so, how many students do you got in your ministry? I don't know. And so you, of course, inflate the number to make you look better, and you'd say, well, you know, I got like 60 kids or 100 kids or whatever it was, and everyone would kind of go around. But I just always hated that question because it always pitted us against one another. Well, I should say I always hated that question until this one moment happened. You see, in youth ministry, unfortunately, there was a kind of a high turnover rate in the youth ministries and the youth pastors in my area. And so it seemed like every year I was getting together with new youth pastors. And so probably about 4 or 5 years into this one church I was at, I get this new group of youth pastors surrounding me. And I look around and I say, you know what? I'm the only youth pastor who's been in this town the longest. And I have the most experience. And I have the most kids. All right. And so that question comes up. And man, you could just kind of feel that pride start to build up in you, right? You felt good about what you did. You worked hard. You accomplished something. Success was awesome. And you're kind of gloating and say, well, it's not a very big group, but, you know, I got And they were amazed. And so no longer was I the guy like learning from all these other seasoned people, but they were trying to ask me questions and trying to learn from me. And I'm thinking, man, this is fantastic. This is what it feels like to be on the other side. This is awesome. Well, it didn't really last that long because you see, like the next month, a youth pastor from the next town came over to join our group. And he had a bigger group. He had more resources. He was funnier. And I was just, I could instantly feel my pride turning into bitterness. Like, man, why can't I have what he has? Why can't I be what he is? And you just kind of feel that comparison start to kind of well up that bitterness inside of you. I don't even know who invited the guy. Probably me. And so, but you ever find yourself in that situation? That situation where you've worked hard to be where you're at, to accomplish what you have accomplished, to be the best in your field or the best parent or the best husband or the best wife, best boyfriend, best girlfriend, whatever. And then someone comes along that just seems to be better. You see, the thing about comparing ourselves is there's always someone with a bigger. There's someone who's richer. There's someone who's stronger. There's someone who's prettier. There's someone who's better at doing whatever that you are doing. And we look at these things and we kind of compare ourselves to them. We think, man, there's always somebody with a better. We compare and compare. And as the heart of this issue, right, there's a deeper question behind this about comparing ourselves to other people. And that bigger question is this: am I good enough? Am I good enough? Do I measure up to the expectations that are put upon me? Do I fit in? Am I accepted? What will people think about me? And we allow our comparisons, they don't just affect us individually. You see, our comparisons continue to branch out to other people in our lives. So maybe you're dating someone now, or maybe you can remember back to the time when you were dating someone and you had that boyfriend and that girlfriend, and all of a sudden you realize, I wish they were a little prettier. I wish they were a little kinder. I wish they were a little more thoughtfuler. And then you get married, and the cycle just continues to go, and you get married, and you want a whole lot of with your spouse. And guys, I know what you're thinking, but that's not what I'm talking about. And here's what happens, right? You want them to be prettier. You want them to be better off financially. You want them to be richer. You want them to be better than they are. Maybe help more around the house. Maybe do more. And then you start having kids, and you want your kids to be smarter. You want them to be more athletic. And you want them to be more all these. And you kind of continue to heap upon them the stress and all this stuff. Like, you need to do better. You need to do better. You need to achieve more. And we disguise this very well if we're honest with ourselves. Right? We disguise it by saying, man, I'm just pushing them to be the full potential person that they can be. I want them to be the best that they can be. And I want to give them everything that they can have to succeed. But if we're really honest with ourselves, right? All this pushing, all this comparison, all this wanting to be better and to have more and to reach more and to get more or whatever, it's really not about them. You see, it's not about them. It's about what people think about us. Because what would people think if my kid didn't have everything? What would people think if my kid wasn't as smart as that other kid? Well, they think I'm dumb because I'm raising them. They would think that I've failed as a parent, or I'm not doing what I should be doing. Or what if people don't like my husband or my wife? Like, they'll quit inviting us to social events, so they need to be funnier, or they need to have better stories, or they need to do something to where I'm more accepted, where I'm more involved. And it's hard to get away from this because, when we go to work, we go into organizations, like organizations and workplaces, they're great at using comparison to try to motivate us to do more, right? Hey, if you work as hard as so-and-so, you'll make as much as them. If you do all the tasks, then you'll get that promotion, right? And then we go home and After putting up with that all day, we go home and we watch TV and we see the things that we'll never have or the things that will never be, the body we can never achieve. And then we get on social media and we look through our friends and they are on those awesome vacations and they get to do all this awesome stuff and we're stuck sitting at home in the snow and it's not fun and we think, man, I'll never have those things. And we're constantly bombarded with images and ideas and expectations that saying we have to achieve this or we aren't accepted or we're not good enough. And so after we watch all that, we just kind of sink into our bed and we just kind of either get depressed and that little voice in our head that says, you know what, you're not good enough. I told you. Or we go the opposite way of comparison. We start comparing ourselves to people who do have less than us. Right? So my grandma, she was a great grandma. She was my mom's mom. And she was a little rough around the edges. She was that grandma that, you know, we knew that she loved us, but she might cuss at us sometimes too. She was just a saint of a lady, but she had this saying. We'd be telling her about our day at school or something like that. She'd be like, honey boy, come here. Let me tell you. Don't let anyone put you down. You're just as good as they are. Probably a little better. And that's a great thing for a grandma to say, right? But it's not great advice. Because in reality, when we continue to put ourselves, we compare ourselves to others, we're putting people into some kind of position. Right, we're putting people either above us or we're putting people below us. We're creating like these social hierarchies, and we allow someone to say, hey, you have all this. I'll never be that. I can't compare to you. You have some kind of authority over me. Or it's the opposite. We compare ourselves and we say, you know what? I might not be rich, but I'm at least richer than that person. Or I might not have the best job, but my job sure is better than my neighbor's job. And we allow them to kind of put them underneath us, and we say, you know what? They're not really worth my time. I'm not going to associate myself with them. And what we come to learn is that with comparing, there's just no winning in comparing. Because ultimately, we're either putting someone above us or we're putting someone below us. And what that ends up doing is it ends up creating injustice in our world. It ends up creating just divisions and all kinds of stuff that just doesn't lead to anything good. So the Bible has a lot to say about comparisons. Actually, in Proverbs, it says this. It says, a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. See, I think we could leave it at that and probably just go home. If we just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to live with a heart of peace because I know that envy will just rot me from the inside out. But we're going to dig a little bit deeper. So there's this book in the Bible called Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes, it's what we call a book of wisdom. It's in the Old Testament, and it was, well, we don't really know who it was written by, but tradition says it was written by King Solomon, and so we're going to go with that, because King Solomon, he was the wisest man that ever lived. I mean, he had accomplished so much. He had accumulated a ton of wealth. He reigned over the nation of Israel. He had 700 wives, maybe not his wisest thing, but he did. And he was just a man of great accomplishment. And so he wrote these books of wisdom. And in Ecclesiastes, if you've never read Ecclesiastes, man, I would encourage you to read it. It'll send you on a roller coaster of emotions. Very good book. And so he comes into Ecclesiastes. We're just going to look at a little bit of part of this. But he starts with this in verse 4 of chapter 4. He says, "And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy from another." So he's saying, look, I'm looking out amongst my kingdom. I'm looking at across all these people. I'm looking at everything that they're doing, all the work that they're doing, all the achievements that they're making. And I just see all their achievements, all their toil is done out of their envy for one another. In other words, people are looking from their left and they're looking over their right shoulder and they're kind of continually comparing themselves. How can I be better than that person? Or how can I be better than that person? Or I don't want to be worse than this person, so I better kick it in. And it's just this envy fueled comparison. And this is before like modern technology and social media. This is like comparing camels, which is an odd conversation if you think about that. If you think like the guy comes home from work and he's talking to his wife and he's saying, man, you'll never believe what Alan got. He got a two-humped camel. I mean, we just got this stinking one-hump camel, and it's old, and it's not even very good. But, you know, at least we're not like Joe down the street. He's still riding a donkey. Like, that would be horrible if we were in that. You know what? I've decided I'm just going to go into debt, and I'm going to go buy a three-hump camel, and it's going to be amazing. Alan's going to be super jealous. And, by the way, I Googled it. Three-hump camels do exist. They're very rare. Alan would have been super jealous. And so, I mean, this is their envy that's just driving them to this whole point. And what Solomon says about this, he says this. He says, look, this too is meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. Solomon says, look, you're achieving all this. You're working hard, but it's meaningless. And before this, Solomon's just going through all these things that he's saying, look, I've achieved all this, but none of it's brought me happiness. None of it's brought me joy. It's all meaningless. So these people that are working hard out of envy, out of one another, it's meaningless also. It's just horrible. But let me warn you, because Solomon's not saying don't work, right? Don't go to work in the next couple of days and just say, you know what? The pastor said that work is meaningless, so I'm done. Don't do that. What he's saying is, like, look, when we put it into the wrong perspective, it's meaningless. He actually even gives us a warning in the next verse. He says, fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. This is that picture that I'm going to sit down, I'm just going to fold my hands and twiddle my thumbs and do nothing. And that idea of ruining yourselves is literally kind of translated to this idea of it'll be self-destructive. So if you just sit and do nothing and just fold your hands and say, forget it, it leads to self-destruction. So what do? Work is meaningless. Doing nothing is meaningless. And so what are we to do with this whole comparing ourselves to one another? Well, Solomon points us in a different direction. He says this. He says, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. So here's the picture here. The picture is this. Better is one handful that's open. One hand that says, you know what, God, what I have is from you. You can take what you want. You can give what you want. But everything I have is from you. So I'm going to live with one hand open, knowing that I don't have to hold on to this stuff. Then two hands that are clenched. Because what happens when you have two clenched hands, you try to get more, but then you realize, I don't have a third hand. I can't carry anymore, and you can't open them. And so he's saying, look, live with one hand open. Don't live with these two hands closed. Because if you live with two hands closed, you're going to continue to compare yourself. You're going to continue to see things that you want, see things that you desire that you're not going to be able to grab a hold of because your hands are closed. So Solomon goes on to give us another illustration. He says, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. He said, there was a man all alone. And we don't know if this it was a man that he was like looking out. Maybe he was looking out his window. Maybe he knew a guy. He had a friend. We don't know if he's like launching into a parable, which is like a story with a significant meaning. But he's going to tell this story to give us a better picture of what this looks like. So there's a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. And let this sink in, because the fact that he had neither son nor brother in this culture meant everything that he had, he couldn't leave it to no one. He couldn't leave it to women. Sorry, women, you didn't have rights back then. So he couldn't leave anything to a wife if he had a wife. So he had no son or brother. He had no one to pass off his inheritance to. And Solomon goes on to say there was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. He's saying this man, he's going all throughout life, and he's living life with two hands closed. Two hands that he's just working and working and working, and he has no one to give it to. He's just continuing to work and pile on everything. He's continued to meet the next deadline or set the next goal or do everything that he can to be the best. And in all of this, this man, he's sitting here thinking he's working, and he asks himself a question, and I want you to think about this question as well, because it's a question that we would maybe answer quickly, but really think about it. He says, for who am I toiling? He asked him, why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? You see, I think that's an easy question for us to think about to answer, because we think automatically, well, I'm doing this all for my family, or I'm doing this all for my learning capacity or my career or whatever it is. But really, when we think about it, at what expense are we doing it at? You know, what suffers because we just say, I'm going to continue to work and work and have more and compare myself to everyone around me and live with those two hands closed? And Solomon goes on to say, look, this too is meaningless. It's a miserable business. It'll bring you nothing but misery. It'll leave you feeling empty. It'll leave you always wanting more because you can never be content with what you have. And it goes back to our bottom line again. There's no winning in comparing. There's no winning in comparing. You see, as we go through this the next few weeks, we're going to continue to unpack what does that look like to live with one hand open. And my hope for you, my hope for me as well, is that we can start working this into our lives. Right? That we can say, how do I live with one hand open? You know, I think a great way that we do that at Tri-County is that's why we have life groups. So I would say, I'm gonna jump into a group with people that can encourage me, that can celebrate my achievements and not compare themselves against me. And that there can be people that I'm not comparing myself against them. Because at the bottom line, when we really think about it, we're all have ourselves looking in a mirror. Right? We're always putting a mirror up to ourselves. And we're asking ourselves this question. We're saying, what or who am I going to use as my reference point to tell me I'm okay? What am I going to use to say that I'm okay? Who is that reference point for you? Is it a parent? Is it your family? Is it the career you're in or the industry that you're involved with? Is it the guy next door? Maybe another parent on the block? And what Solomon is saying is saying, look, if we continue to look at people on this earth as our reference, it'll always be meaningless. If we continue to compare ourselves to other people and what they have and what they're achieving and what they're doing, we'll always end up being empty and always wanting more. And maybe you're thinking, maybe I don't really know yet if I really am comparing myself to people. I'm going to ask a few more questions. And when I ask these questions, just think these are going to be hard questions to answer. They just are. But if you answer yes to one of these questions or something comes into your mind with one of these questions, there's a good chance that you're continuing to compare yourself to other people. You're living that life with two fists closed instead of a hand open to God. The first question is this. Are you exhausted from trying to keep up with blank? Fill in the blank. Are you exhausted from trying to keep up with Joe down the street? Are you exhausted from trying to keep up with Mike at work? You say, look, I've been trying to be better. I've been trying to do more. But I'm just exhausted. It's draining me. Next question. Are you allowing what other people have to prevent you from enjoying what you have? Do what you see other people have prevent you from enjoying the things that you have? Whether it's nicer things or whatever, what do you have that you can really enjoy that you're not enjoying? Because your eye is always on somebody else's stuff. Next question. Do you drive your kids crazy because of what other kids are accomplishing? You know, they say that teenagers today are the most anxiety-driven group. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of different causes for that, but the idea is, one idea is this, is am I driving my kids so crazy and setting a standard so high for them because I want them myself to look good for what I'm doing or the job that I'm doing, and they're just being driven crazy because other kids are accomplishing more than them, and I want them to be the best. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting your kid to be the best. I think that's admirable. But at what cost? Next question. Who would you secretly enjoy see fail? Who would you secretly enjoy seeing fail? Who's that person in your life when they didn't get that promotion, you kind of chuckled, right? Or who's that person in your life when they maybe had a little bit larger bill than they expected and they had to pay a little bit more, did you're like, huh, told you. See, here's what it boils down to is when we can't genuinely love someone if we want to see them fail. We can't genuinely love someone if we're continually pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. In other words, we can't genuinely follow Jesus well if we're continually comparing ourselves to everyone around us. Take this home with one other real life example. About 5 years ago, There's a guy named Dan Price. If you're in the business world, you've probably heard this story. He owns a business called Gravity Payments out of Seattle. Seattle is not a cheap place to live. And so he was walking through the park with one of his employees, and she was telling him, like, you know, Dan, you know, there's just bills that I'm having a hard time paying. There's struggles in my life, and, you know I'm working hard. And he did. He knew. He knew her before she started working for him, and she started working for him, and he knew that she was making about 40 grand a year. Not bad. And she's still working, and she's working another job on top of that just to try to survive and just to make ends meet. And he knew this woman. He's like, look, I know that she's not irresponsible. She was an Army veteran. She served two tours in Iraq. And ultimately, I know that everything that she gets, she should deserve more. She's that type of person. And it kind of brought this to his attention. And she said, you know what? I bet there's a lot of other employees in our company that are in the same boat as I am. So Dan did something radical. It actually sent shockwaves through the business world. There were articles all about it. I remember reading it when he did it. He said, like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to crunch some numbers. And he sold all of his shares. He was making like $1.1 million. And, I mean, this is a young guy, you know, living in these nice houses, nicest cars, everything. He said, I'm going to cut my salary, and I'm going to raise my minimum salary at my company to $70,000 a year. Meaning the entry-level person that comes into my company is going to make $70,000 a year. Some of you guys are thinking, where do I apply? I get that. He says, this is what it's going to be. Man, he got all kinds of backlash too, right? People called him a socialist. People said, hey, this is horrible. Your company's going to go down. People aren't going to trust you anymore. And so the reason I think of this example is because a couple of days ago, I was scrolling through Twitter, and I see an article that was written by the BBC, and they were talking about how this guy is doing now, 5 years from his big adjustment in his company. And so I was reading through this article, and man, it just amazed me. Because what happened is, like, you know, look, people are doing better than I could ever imagine. So people are working harder because they don't have to worry about paying their bills. They're being more innovative. They're being motivated more to do what I asked them to do. You know, other people are stepping up. He said the number of even families that have grown, he said before he made this change, he said maybe one or two babies were being born amongst his employees. In the last year, he had over 30 babies born because these families were finally able to say, you know what, I don't have to compare myself to everyone else. I can meet ends meet. I can start a family. I can live closer to work. I'm not saying we all need to do this. I'm just saying there's this idea that he said, I'm not gonna compare myself to other companies. I'm gonna live like God wants me to live. I'm gonna be everything that I can be for my employees. And to this day, he still makes the minimum at $70,000 a year. And at the end of this article, I thought it was so interesting. He ends it by being quoted. He says, there are tests every day. Every day there are tests. He goes on to say, you know, I'm the same age as Mark Zuckerberg, the owner of Facebook, very wealthy guy. So I'm the same age as Mark Zuckerberg, and I have dark moments where I think I want to be just as rich as Mark, and I want to compete with him to be on the Forbes list every day. And I want to be on the cover of Time magazine making lots of money, and these greedy things are tempting. And they are, man. We look in our life, man, these things are tempting. They're easy to want to be that person or to do that or make that much more money. He goes on to say, it's not like it's easy to just turn those things down. It's not easy. But my life is so much better now than what it was 5 years ago. It's just so much better. And so as we continue through this series, I just want you to ask yourselves those questions, right? What is that one thing that I'm referring to? What's that reference point? When I look in the mirror and I say, what is that thing that I'm looking at to make me okay? And if that thing is anything other than Jesus, you'll always be empty. Always be empty. Let's pray. God, we just want to thank you for who you are. God, we know that our lives can be full of things that we just compare ourselves to, that, God, there's this competitive culture that we live in. And, God, we just want to make sure that we know that, God, you say that we are loved. God, that you say that you will provide everything that we need. And so, God, we just pray that you'll allow us to put our trust in you, that you'll allow us to compare ourselves not to the people around us, God, that we will just only compare ourselves to who you say we are. And God, that you'll continue to guide us, that you'll continue to work in our lives, God, that you'll at least to help us to set aside and to live with one hand open, not these two fists that are just closed tight, not allowing us to hold on to anything else. But God, let us be people that are generous, that are loving, and that do what we can to help the people around us. I just pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.